It's good to have on Wednesday E-Day a mentor of mine, a guy I've spent a lot of time listening to over the past years, Dr. David Morris with the Institute of Local Self-Reliance. And it's very good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much.
And so tell the people why you're here today exactly.
Well, I'm here today because of something that was passed in the second bailout bill. You know, everybody knows about the bailout bill, but what they don't know is that the second bill, they got passed an energy bill that they had been trying to get passed for 18 months that the Republicans had bottled up.
And these are the extension of the incentives?
Oh, well, it's an extension of the incentives, but it's also new incentives.
New incentives altogether.
The key new incentive is a $7,500, that $7,500 tax credit for electrified cars. And I use the term electrified cars because they could be plug-in hybrids or they could be all-electric cars, and you get the tax credit based on the amount of all-electric miles you can go. So it's up to $7,500. But that tax credit now really makes these things competitive, especially in those parts, especially if you have $4 a gallon gasoline. But in Minnesota, the price of gasoline is going down, but our price of electricity is quite low compared to the rest of the country.
And so, gasoline may be going up because OPEC is meeting today in emergency session to cut production 2.5 million barrels per day.
Yes, and given that it's now $70 a barrel, all those offshore drilling and all those drilling rigs that were just about to go are going to be stopped. And so that means that 6 to 12 months from now, we're going to be back to probably a shortage situation.
All right. This speaks to the issue of new electric cars, but not to those who would do like Mayor R.T. Ryback has done, and that's take a Prius and spend the $12,000 to have it converted to plug-in electric hybrid. So converting the car right now does not get an energy tax credit.
That's correct. Now, the original bill to allow for these tax credits for electrified vehicles was introduced in June of 2007 by Senator Obama and Senator Orrin Hatch and Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington. And that bill did have a tax credit for conversions as well as a tax credit for new cars. In the bailout bill, they took out the provision for conversions, and I hope that they put it back in January because essentially, if you allow conversions, two things happen. First of all, you jumpstart the number of vehicles that will be on the road. I mean, you'll probably have 50 or 100,000 vehicles on the road before the GM, Volt comes out in the end of 2010. And the other thing is that no matter how quickly electrified vehicles come in after 2010, you're going to be sitting with 50 to 75 million existing vehicles on the road for the next 10 years, 5, 10 years. And so you're going to have to figure out a way to convert them. And once you convert, you're talking about a vehicle which is at worst about an 80-mile-per-gallon vehicle. But when it travels on electricity, it's over 100 miles per gallon.
I know you've studied this, and I want to ask you a question that may require a long answer. Out in California, they've developed a bunch of rich kids got together and pulled their money, and they invented the Tesla on a Shelby Lotus frame, 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. Incredible performance, 250 miles on a charge. Much of what we're seeing today in terms of electric cars are 40 to 70 miles on a charge. What are they doing right out in California, and why can't we get their battery?
Well, I will tell you that I was out in California a year ago, and I was I drove a Tesla vehicle. But I will also say that since the time I was out there, they have fired one of their CEOs, fired another one of their CEOs, and then last week they decided they weren't going to come out with their second iteration, which was the sedan. They basically stopped that because of lack of capital and because of other things.
And also because they didn't have any car people in the business. That there is an important element in there. They didn't have anybody who knew how to do the job of distribution. They didn't know how to do the job of fixing a mechanical breakdown. So the reason I didn't buy one is that if it broke, I had to have it shipped to Chicago to be repaired.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
But the Tesla, at the time, it was a sort of state of the art, but now we're going to think of that as ancient history because since then there's a company, BYD, in China. That just announced.
I knew it would be China.
And it's China. And not only is it China, but Warren Buffett just put $2 billion into them 3 weeks ago. You know it's real.
Yeah.
And they will be coming out with an electric vehicle, actually a plug-in vehicle they're going to be coming out with in the next 6 months, believe it or not. And they will be coming out with an all-electric car, which they say will also get 200 miles before it has to be recharged in late 2009, early 2010.
So you could go to the lakes. Now people in Minnesota are thinking about stuff like this.
That's right. But the other thing that's happened in the last year and a half is that you're talking about fast charging stations. And so PYD and also Chrysler and also Renault are talking about rolling out their cars, and then their car batteries are capable of being recharged in 10 minutes. Now, you wouldn't be able to recharge them in 10 minutes at your house.
Right.
But on the other hand, if you're recharging at your house, you can do it overnight.
Do you do any damage to the batteries on
No, that's charging? Why these batteries can do it on a quick charge. Okay. So what you'll begin to have is gas stations, which now provide you free air, might at least initially provide you with a little free electricity, and then eventually they'll charge you for it. So
that
you'll have
sense.
These charging stations around the city, and San Diego San Jose is already rolling out a citywide charging stations, and San Francisco just put out a request for bids.
And Portland is doing some as well.
Yes, and so it's happening very rapidly. I mean, it's underground because people don't see these things on the streets yet. But we're not talking about just General Motors, which if we were, I'd say, well, maybe not. But, you know, Chrysler has announced, Renault has announced, the state of Israel and the country of Denmark have both signed up with Renault and another entrepreneur from the United States to roll out a countrywide electric charging system and electric vehicles. So its time has come. And now the question in some ways is how we prepare for it, because when you suddenly think about having millions of electrified vehicles, that means you have a lot of storage capacity sitting there for electricity. And what, over the last 100 years, the flaw, if you will, the Achilles heel of the electric system is that it has no storage capacity. But once it does, everything begins to change. First of all, you can have intermittent sources of electricity like wind and solar, and it doesn't matter because when the sun's shining, you generate the electricity, and then you can use it when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
Right. And the other thing is that you begin to talk about focusing on the distribution system, not on the transmission system. You begin to sort of miniaturize your overall grid system. And so Minneapolis becomes a lot more important than the upper Midwest in terms of electric planning.
It can become distributed. So you could have a solar charging station anywhere. You wouldn't have to have a big power plant someplace providing that electricity.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly true. When I was out in California, as I said, I was in a Tesla, but I was also in 12 other cars from a little putt-putt to a Tesla, and I was doing an article for a travel magazine, and every car that I drove in, the owner of that car had solar cells on their roof. And they essentially said, look, I got a car. Why shouldn't I have my own fueling station?
Yeah, we'll put a windmill on top of a car pretty soon. It's 421. Dr. David Morris is our guest from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And today is kind of a red-letter day. In Minnesota, they've got solar-roofed cars, and they've got plug-in hybrids that they're unveiling around here, and people are really quite happy with what is going on. And it is the energy issue that I wanted to talk about, because if everybody, 220 million cars and light trucks in the United States were suddenly to go electric, wouldn't we have to build a whole bunch of new power plants to take care of that?
No, and if people want to know this in detail, chapter and verse, they can go up on our website, newrules.org, and just download Driving Our Way to Energy Independence, which goes into it. But essentially, we shouldn't need any new power plants because we have an enormous amount of excess power plant capacity. That is, we build our power plants for both base load, which means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but we also build other power plants for peak load, that is, to meet the electricity need at only certain times. And so we have enough electricity off peak to provide all the electricity for 75% of all of our miles driven. However, we would need to use more electricity. We wouldn't need more power plants. And we would need maybe 20-25% more electricity consumption than we do now in order to displace 75% of our miles with electricity. And the next question is, of course, where would that come from? And initially, because almost 60% of our electricity comes from coal, and because coal is what we would burn off-peak, it would tend to come from coal. But as we ramp up intermittent electricity, like wind and the like, we would ramp them up as we're ramping up the storage capacity within your electric vehicle industry. And we also need to understand that electric vehicles, as quickly as they come in, are not going to come in overnight. And so as we ramp up the number of electric vehicles, we are also ramping up the number of wind turbines. For example, the number of wind turbines this year that will become operational could power 4 million all-electric cars.
Wow. All right, now I'm going to give you the tough one. This is one you and I have discussed privately, and it really has an effect in the state of Minnesota. That is trailer hitch. To pull the boat, to pull the farm equipment and the implements, to pull the trailer, to pull the earth mover, the whatever you're doing, almost every vehicle around here, I would say at least 70% of the vehicles I see on the highway have a trailer hitch of some kind. But in most vehicles, even hybrid vehicles, if you were to put a trailer hitch on the back of one, you avoid the warranty. I know there's more inertial power in an electric engine than an electric motor than in an internal combustion engine at the low end, and they can do the work because I know diesel locomotives can move a ton, 400 miles on a gallon of gas or fuel, diesel. So I'm wondering, will there come a day when an electric vehicle will be able to pull a boat up a ramp?
Yes, I think that there will come a day. I mean, you can do it now. I mean, really, the issue here is not a technological issue. It's a cost issue. And so, you know, how big a motor, you know, are you going to need there, and what are you going to have to equip the car with? And so, you know, that is going to be an issue. But right now, you go into any warehouse, and your forklifts are all electric.
Right.
Locomotives have been all electric. Buses, you know, are now have been all electric. And so you clearly get, you know, a lot of lift. But I think that the issue, it's just as if you convert a Prius, it's about $12,000. But if you convert a Ford Escape, you know, hybrid, it's about $18,000 because the Escape is heavier. And if you were going to convert an Explorer, it would be even more money. And so you're talking here about a money issue, which is why, you know, that type of vehicle probably would be sort of a second generation, if you will.
Okay. Now, T. Boone Pickens has been talking about developing wind and using our vast natural gas supplies to power our vehicles and just do away with gasoline, diesel fuel altogether. What does Dr. David Morris think of T. Boone Pickens' idea?
Well, I have written about it actually just down in your TV studio here, a few feet away. I had a debate with a natural gas person just a week ago that there are two fatal flaws in the T. Boone Pickens plan when it comes to natural gas. One is that he would shift natural gas. He would take natural gas away from electric generation. Now, natural gas power plants are a perfect complement to intermittent renewable energy sources because they can be turned on and off very quickly, whereas coal plants, nuclear plants can't. So they can be backup power. They can make wind firm. And anybody who wants huge increases in wind always talks about natural gas being their backup. And the other fatal flaw is that he would talk about spending huge amounts of money to retrofit, by the way, only 20% of the fleet is what he's talking about, even though you'd think he was talking about 100%. But anyway, to retrofit 20% of the fleet, and yes, you would reduce our consumption of oil, it's true, but after you're finished spending, you know, $30, $40 billion to do that, you end up with a transportation system that is still 100% dependent on fossil fuels, and a fossil fuel that doesn't have a life expectancy much longer than oil. So it does seem to me that not only is it short-sighted, but given that T. Boone Pickens is a natural gas man, and given that he is the major owner of the largest company that makes natural gas vehicles and converts vehicles to natural gas vehicles, there's a certain self-interest, I think, that has crept into that plan.
All right. The final question for you, David, is this one. It has to do not just with the energy issues that we've been talking about all of this time, but it has to do with what we're looking at today. Price of gasoline is coming down. The history is every time the price of gasoline comes down, alternatives fall off the drawing board. People don't care about them anymore because we can afford the gasoline. What direction will gasoline go?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what direction gasoline is going to go. Nobody knows. But
Goldman Sachs says 70 is the bottom.
Well, I mean, 70 might be the bottom. I mean, if you take a look at the history is that in September, October, gasoline prices drop by about a third. And they've dropped about a third So it's not that unusual to have the drop. What was unusual is to have the $140 peak in July, I believe it was. So you will have gasoline prices go down. But I think that the question you're really aiming at is, well, now what happens to our thirst for energy efficiency or alternative energy,
right,
or getting us,
right,
off imported oil? And certainly what we saw in 1981 was when the price of oil dropped by 75% in the next 3 years after 1981. It's now 50%. And when Ronald Reagan came into office, we just ended all of our alternative energy programs. But 2008 is different, I think, from a number of different perspectives. One is that no matter who wins the presidency, renewable energy is an alternative fuels is a priority. And number two is that we have an industry now. 1981, we didn't have an industry. Now we have a a $50 billion renewable energy industry, and that industry isn't going to go away quietly. It has political clout and it has market clout. And so no matter what the price of gasoline does, I think in the next 6 to 12 months, our renewable energy industry is safe. I am more worried about the collapse of the financial system, because already you're finding that wind generators, solar cells, ethanol plants are either not being built or are being shut down because they can't get credit.
Dr. David Morris, pleasure always to have you with us here on Wednesday E-Day, and keep up the good work at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance.
Thanks, Don.